Mind Your Farm Business on realagriculture.com is brought to you by RBC Royal Bank.
Welcome to the Mind Your Farm Business podcast brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. I'm Sean Haney, founder of realagriculture.com and host of Real Ag Radio that you can hear every afternoon at 4:30 Eastern on Rural Radio 147 on Sirius XM. You can find more episodes of this podcast by going to mindyourfarmbusiness.com. Today's topic on the Mind Your Farm Business podcast is about working in a multi-generational family business. Working alongside family members of different generations can be so rewarding, but challenging at the same time. There are good days, bad days, and days that will just make your eyes well up. At the end of the day, if you focus on trust, respect, and accountability, there's a great chance that your multi-generational farm will be successful in the long term. Today's guests are Ed and Lyle Peters of Manitoba. The Peters have some great stories and experiences that they are willing to share with us today to assist all of you in working within a family business of multiple generations. Ed, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. You?
I'm doing very well. And we also have Lyle here. Hey, Lyle, how's it going?
Very well. You?
I'm doing good. Well, I really appreciate you guys taking a break from harvest. Okay, let's focus on your multi-generational farm. It's quite unique, and I'm looking forward to hearing some of your stories and just how you manage the farm, because I know there's probably good days and there's days that are also challenging, and how you handle both of those is equally important. So, Ed, give us a bit of a background on the farm.
Okay, well, I don't know exactly how far you want to go back, but you can always cut stuff out, I guess. But my dad and my uncle, together with their father, bought a farm in the Randolph area in 1935-ish. And they farmed together till they took over the farm from my grandpa. And in 1948, my dad and my uncle split the farm. And so that was a transition to separate family farms then. And that was a dairy, grain, and hog farm in those days. In 1966, my oldest brother bought a dairy farm just a mile from the home farm where Dad and the rest of us grew up. And in 1970, my dad and two brothers did a partnership and amalgamated the farms into one entity. In 1975, I graduated from the U of M, and the farm was now incorporated, and I joined as a partner. And we, in 1977, we actually sold the dairy farm, and then the from there on in, we were only hog and grain. In 1980, my brother-in-law joined the farm, so that meant there were four of us plus my dad involved at that time. In 1988, my dad officially retired and was no longer an owner in the farm. We saw interest in the next generation. We could see that from early on, especially in two of the families. And we started expanding to accommodate that into the hog industry from 1994 to 2004 with the thoughts of the family joining. And so in the end, three nephews of mine and my son Lyle started farming with us as they finished schooling, etc. Whenever they were done, they would join in. And in 2013, we sold the hog division after the collapse of the hog market. We sold the hog division to them in 2013. And now in 2017, we actually bought a grain farm together with them. So first we separated, now we're doing stuff together again. So we still, the older generation still owns a bulk of the land, although the other farms own a bunch now too. So that's sort of the history of where we are now.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. I love that historical perspective to how you got to this point. And one of the things I really, really pick up on is one, the amount of family members that are involved in the operation, and two, how you've really shifted and changed the operation based on the agricultural environment at the time. From that perspective, Lyle, you know, as you've seen some of the changes that have happened on the farm, that's got to be like, how do you go about making some of those decisions?
The making of the decisions is sometimes harder than what the market forces you to do. I mean, the pig market changed a lot between 2007 and 2012. We were fully independent at that time. And then in the meantime, the uncle sold that farm to us, which was a very good deal for us as a younger generation. We were able to buy that at market value, but the market value had collapsed a bunch, which made us happy, I guess, to get things slightly, cheaper than they would have been maybe 5 or 8 years ago. And I think the uncles were probably also happy to be rid of some of those headaches. And in the meantime, our younger generation has entered into a partnership with High Life. That's a large hog processor based out of Willow Creek, but they have their processing plant in Meatbaw, Manitoba. And so we have a partnership with them on our finished hogs, taking some of the risk away from our younger generation and helping us transition to owning our own pig farm.
So, Ed, do you have regular sort of meetings to discuss how the farm's doing or what needs to be done operationally or big strategic things, or is it a little bit more informal?
It would be probably more informal, although we do spend, especially in winter, we spend a chunk of time in the office every morning and discuss stuff that we want to, that we see coming up. But anytime that there are larger decisions that are being made, like buying a 2,000-acre grain farm, then we all get together. But I think at this point now, Lyle and I do a lot of the decision making. We each represent one division of the farm, and although we're not related as far as work and finance is concerned, it's still. Because lots of the land is integrated into near the hog barns, there's a lot of stuff that still happens independently, but in concert with each other.
Yeah, when you were giving me the history lesson, Ed, one of the things that you talked about was about, expanding because there was another generation that was interested. And there's a lot of farms that attempt to do that. And one of the reasons is so everybody has something to kind of focus on, so everybody's not stepping all over each other. Lyle, from your perspective, has that really helped the family kind of function inside the business? Is the fact that it's pretty clear what people are accountable for from a responsibility standpoint?
Certainly for my generation, that's made a very big difference. My cousin Craig manages our sow barn, and my cousin Jerome manages our sort of six nursery barns. And my cousin Daryl is in charge of all of our finishing barns. And then I work mostly on the land side and do the bookkeeping and, deal with the bankers and that sort of stuff. So we all have very different and defined roles. So from a day-to-day perspective, we don't step on each other's toes, which I think is good. That creates less arguments and less infighting. We still obviously get together to make any slightly major decisions. And then the older generation all works here on the grain farm. And so, and even inside that, I think everyone sort of has their own sort of defined roles.
Ed, as one of the senior members of the family in the operation, has it been difficult at times to let the others, the younger generation, make mistakes when maybe you would have done something differently? How do you manage that and try to give them enough rope, so to speak, but at the same time, make sure there's no big, huge mistakes that dramatically impact the farm?
Well, I think because of the downturn in the hog industry, we really had our whole transition plans slowed down time, because you can't put a noose around someone's neck when you know that they're not going to make it. And so we... In in all reality, the next generation had run the hog into the hog division for 10 years before they bought it. Maybe 10 is a bit much, but they're very close to that. And we were hands-on or hands-off for the most part, and yet we still signed the check. So that is a very different feeling I would expect for them than the day that they actually owned it. But very little changed. They have made very good decisions, and in the end, it's their farm, and sure, we have a vested interest in it, but we also have to remember that we're all over 64, and they're all under 40, and we do recall that there is a bit of a mental shift that happens when we were that age, so we're happy for them that they can, that they have the energy and the wherewithal to make some of these decisions.
Yeah, farming isn't easy. That'll be no shocking statement to anybody that's listening to this podcast. And you have to have the passion for it. And we know that there's a lot of people working on a farm. You know, they were a farm kid. There was a time where, you know, certain kids ended up on the farm and others didn't. And some kids felt like they were forced to stay. But Ed, did you always know that Lyle had an interest in being on the farm?
Yes. From the age of two, I wasn't allowed to walk at certain places in the house because he had been seeding. And so I think there was never any question. That was what he wanted to do. And so we tried to make that possible. And for us, the challenge has been that there's been two families that don't have any children involved and two families that do. So that complicates some things. Yeah.
So, Lyle, you did lots of carpet farming as a kid?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, no, there's still lots of... There's still lots of old farm toys here at my mom and dad's place. And now my son is three and a half, and he's starting to do the same thing. So it's fun to watch.
I see what's going on here. I see what's going on. You guys are hooking them early. That's good to see. We need more and more people thinking about coming back to the farm. Absolutely. So, Lyle, from your perspective, there's a couple things here that a lot of family farms struggle with. And you've got a lot of different family members in this operation. It's easy for the farm business issues to move into the family function. So, you know, when everybody gets together on Sunday for a barbecue, all of a sudden becomes a whole bunch of shop talk. How do you guys manage that from your perspective, Lyle, there's business and then there's family, or do you successfully just merge the two together all the time? What's your perspective on that?
I'll speak probably only to the younger generation on this one. I would suggest that my three cousins and me were actually friends, not just business partners and cousins. And so I would say that makes a big difference. We do socialize lots, and our wives do roll their eyes when we have naturally start talking about things that happened at work, but we do definitely try not to keep the business things out. The four of us meet probably once a month or once every other month to actually talk about work and what's going on. We've been working through this PED problem that's been in southeastern Manitoba. So that's porcine epidemic diarrhea, which goes through and basically kills all your baby piglets. Mm-hmm. And so we've had that now here running through all of southeastern Manitoba, and we were part of the casualties, I guess. And so working through that has been tough on the schedule and tough on the employees and tough on everyone. So we've tried very hard to meet and try to get through some of those issues. And it is hard when we get together to not talk about work, even when we're trying to socialize, but we do try to keep them separate.
Ed, how have you always managed that, the separation of family and the business?
Well, because all of us, that I have one brother who lives in elsewhere, but all of us who were here were involved in the farm. So when we did get together, that wasn't necessarily a big detriment. The sometimes, yes, I guess the wives got a bit tired of it. But we have, in our generation, we have tried to keep we have, to a large extent, kept our social life and our business life separate. We have separate friends. We have vacationed together as a family a couple of times, but generally we do things not with each other. And partly that's because of work. You can't have two families gone in the middle of summer. It doesn't work. And so we've found that some separation of that has worked very well for us. And yet we get along really well. So that's been our experience.
So Lyle, when you get together with some of the cousins, you mentioned that you are quite good friends. And you do socialize together. How do you manage conflict? Because, you know, it's, when things are going really, really well, it's, you know, it's easy to celebrate and, you know, think the good times just keep on rolling on. And we all know that they don't. And you mentioned the PED challenge. Maybe that's a good example. Like, how do you manage through some of those more conflictive times to come up with the best solutions?
I would actually say that collectively we've had very little work conflict, as it were, where one person is, let's say mad at the other, or even from a decision-making perspective, I would say we've made very few decisions where we haven't been basically in agreement. So that's been really good. And even from a work perspective, I mean, there's usually some, whatever, you're not always 100% happy with everything that's gone on, but and nothing's been terribly bad. Working through this PED challenge, the good news is that really it's no one's fault. It just seems to be our satellite is in a very livestock-intensive spot of southeastern Manitoba, and the PED broke there, and basically every barn in that area got it, and so whether it got traveled by air or, you know, through whatever other way, it ended up in the barn, and it really was no one's fault, and so there was no blame or no yelling. I mean, no one was very excited to have to work through this challenge because it ends up affecting everyone downstream from the Sabine as well as it sort of makes its round through all the barns. But, you know, I would say we've actually never really fought or really had very much conflict, so it hasn't been a huge problem for us.
We'll have more of my discussion with Ed and Lyle Peters, but first, a word from our sponsor. This episode of Mind Your Farm Business is brought to you by RBC Royal Bank. In many farm families, the older generation is thinking about life after farming, while the younger generation is excited for the future and poised to take the reins. Our people have the expertise to help all parties prepare for succession and put their plans in motion. Your farm's legacy and its future is too important to leave to chance. Go to rbc.com/agriculture to find an ag specialist near you. So, Ed, I'm going to speculate here. The reason that Lyle's able to say that is because, one, there's respect amongst the family members in terms of what everybody does, and two, I'm also guessing that there's been some rules laid out that, you know, sort of this is how, you know, there's no surprises. There's some rules laid out in terms of what, and those rules maybe even unwritten, but there's some rules in terms of how everybody interacts with each other.
Yeah. You know, we learned, obviously you learn from your parents and, you know, my dad had a way of dealing with things. And one of the things that we were taught as young kids, is when you've made a decision, you don't go back there. I mean, you learn from it, but you do not rehash those things. And so that is something that we have made decisions, and you don't always make the right one, but we look forward rather than back, and that really helps. And in our case, when you grow up in a family, you know, there's a natural pecking order that gets developed over the years. And so some of that, you just continue on where a certain person has gifts in another area and another person has gifts in another area. You recognize that and you support that. And so you try not to compare. Like that seems to be the downfall of lots of people, where you don't compare, because it isn't always completely fair. Yeah. One week you might actually work more than the other guy. And so those are things that we have learned over the years and have managed to implement.
Yeah, I think those are all very, very good points. Is that how you feel too, Lyle?
Yes, the unwritten rule is definitely there. I think the sentence that we've used is fair, not equal, because at the end of the day, life isn't quite fair, and it certainly can't be equal. I will suggest that on the grain farm, we have some extremely busy weeks. And for my cousin who works in the sow barn, it's much more steady. But he also doesn't get maybe a break that maybe happens in wintertime. So that's sort of where that fair, not equal type sentence would work. It is hard sometimes not to compare, especially when you've worked 80 hours this week and maybe someone went golfing. That isn't always that easy, but it has to be done. And in our situation, at least for the most part, I think all of our wives don't spend very much time comparing. Two of them work full time and one works half time and one doesn't work outside the home. And so that there is some, whatever, life isn't exactly even for everyone that way either. So some of the wives that work full time, those families have a little bit more money and other people make their own decisions. And that's just how life is. So it can't always be, compared completely apples to apples. So we think we've got a pretty good balance going right now.
Yeah, Lyle, you just hit on something that I think needs to be a little bit more of a focus, and that is the spouses that maybe aren't involved in the operation, whether those be wives or husbands. It's really critical to have them in this circle of, fair and equal, and those two things aren't the same. You really have to have everybody on side, not just the family members that are working in the farm, but it's also the spouses that are, looking at things maybe a little bit more externally than the daily operations. I think you hit on something really, really key there.
Yeah, I think so too. Our wives also, I would say, our four wives, I would say, are also friends. That helps. I think that makes a big difference. That isn't always the same in every, whatever, in any family business, where sometimes the spouses think that, whatever, they don't like each other, or they think that the dynamics maybe are wrong, and then that creates conflict or creates infighting. And so far, we haven't had any of that. So far, maybe we're really lucky, or maybe we've got something good going. Who knows?
Ed, it sounds like your family operation here, really, my guess is you have succession sort of figured out. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think, yes. But that's a lot of work. And that has to start before you're 60, because I think that's too late if it starts then. You have to think that through well ahead of time, and because the tendency is to hang on and then let your kids make decisions when they're 45, and that's kind of a waste of ability, and I think it's really difficult for the next generation to be really interested then. And so the tendency, I would say, is to wait too long with making those decisions. And partly that is because it's actually a lot of work, and it isn't clear. That's the problem. So what we had planned in 2006, we had worked on for six, maybe even 10 years before that. And when 2007, 2008 hit and the bottom fell out of the hog market, we had to start right from scratch. The intent was there, and we were fortunate that the next generation didn't walk away and say, "Well, if you guys don't give us this," they saw what was going on and realized that this was the best for everything. And in the end, it worked out. But it's a lot of give and take.
And Ed, the audience is, everybody probably listening is familiar with this sort of scenario that happens, is that, we'll have this discussion when seeding's completed. We'll have this discussion when the hog barn's empty. We'll have this discussion when harvest is over. And that calendar just keeps on turning and nobody ever has the discussion. It really takes discipline, Ed, to have these discussions and make sure everybody understands mutually what everybody's thinking.
Yeah, and that when you're thinking about these things on the tractor or in your house or wherever, and you come together, those aren't always exactly the same. And in our case, it really comes down to my two brothers, who don't have children in the farm, being willing to delay payment
which gives the next generation opportunity to farm. If they all wanted their money tomorrow, the farm would be gone.
So,
because at the price of land now, you cannot make that kind of a transition on the farm our size to the next generation. It would just become impossible.
Lyle, what was your
highly unlikely?
Yeah, Lyle, what was your experience during the succession discussion and the process?
Well, originally going back to the first piece in 2007 and then the big piece in 2013, the uncles were, gracious enough to sell us those pig barns at that current market value, which was very low. Probably knowing full well that if they held on for another 3, 4, 5 years, that market would probably come back and there would be, you know, whatever, more equity there for them. And so that sort of piece of give and take was able to get us started. And then we were also a little bit fortunate that we bought sort of at the beginning of 2013. And if you count the years of 2014, 15, 16, and 17 were all very good years in the hog market with the PED that broke in the southern states. And so for us, it was really good. We were able to sort of buy in a low time, and then it switched to a half decently good time right away. So we didn't have the cash flow struggles with the way, which was really good. Now we've had some other struggles right now with PED and actually our sow barn burnt in 2017, all of it. And so the rebuilding of that and some of this has created struggles for us now. At least we were able to sort of get off and get going. And then now, as we move forward to transitioning, we are working on a plan to buy out the two oldest partners that don't have kids in the farm. And that plan, as my dad alluded to, is actually quite expensive. Land in Southeastern Manitoba here has gotten very expensive, and so the land and the farm that we have to buy are very expensive. And so working through that, the plan of how can this work that, you know, that generation gets the money that they're owed, and then that our generation has some sort of ability to pay. There has to be a happy medium there, and there has to be some give and take. And those guys are definitely willing to take their money over time, because as my dad alluded to, if they wanted their money in one shot, I'm not convinced that the bank would want to borrow us that money, because land doesn't cash flow particularly well. So It's been a good process for our family, working with everyone. And the give and take on both generations has been really good.
Okay, guys, let's finish up with this. It's advice for the audience. You know, I think everybody knows that from the discussion we've had here, there's a lot of really good stuff happening at your family operation. Lyle, let's start with you. What advice would you give to other farmers, your farming peers, whether they're in fruit and vegetable or they're dairy farmers or they're broadacre farmers? What advice would you give to them to have success in a multi-generational family farm?
The first one, I think, would be to make sure that everyone communicates that, especially in a multi-generational farm. There's certainly different wants and needs if you're 65 than if you're 35. And those things need to be communicated. I think everyone needs to know what you want. And if you're in the younger generation, I think you have to make sure that you have the drive, and that even that the older generation knows that you have the drive and knows that they're not, that you're not going to drive the bus off a cliff if you do that. So,
Ed, how about you? What advice do you have for some of your peers out there?
Well, I agree with what Lyle said, but I think the advice I would have would be start early. Start at age 50. Start thinking about it at between age 50 and 55, because it gets more and more difficult as you go on. And also, I think one of the things that we've found, it's very difficult to get external financing for a transition on a large business, because that is money that goes somewhere that isn't going to add to your income. So instead of buying land for whatever, you're now giving money that is not getting any return. So that's a very, very difficult process for financial institutions to sign up on quite easily. So you have to think about that ahead of time, either
by putting some money away or by being willing to finance a good portion of that for the next generation. It's not that the financial institutions aren't at all interested, but for the whole piece, it's very difficult.
Ed and Lyle, I really appreciate you joining me here today. This has been a great discussion on operating a multi-generational family farm, and I wish you all the best into the future.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That was a really fun discussion. Like, I just think that it's so easy to focus on some of the negatives. You know, the stories where family business goes wrong, father and son, mother and daughter, father and nephew, nobody gets along. Farm has to be sold, company blows up, land sold, and it's just a memory. If you do it right, and if you work at it, that's the thing, I think. When you listen to the discussion there with the Peters, this is a process. This isn't just something that you do one day, it's done, and you just reap the rewards for generations. This is something you have to really work at. And I think that's, if there's anything from that discussion there with Ed and Lyle, that was my takeaway. And the respect that they have for each other and understanding where everybody is coming from, but at the same time realizing that generations are different. And, you know, it's easy to make fun of different generations. Those are cheap thrills, cheap jokes. But the reality is there are some differences. Some of those differences are positive, and some of those differences are things that we have to kind of work through and actually take the time to understand. So I found this episode, honestly, truly rewarding, truly fascinating, because one, it's a positive story, and two, it sort of shows us that we can make it work if we put the work in to really make a multi-generational family farm work, because they can work, because they do work. Instead of focusing on the negative all the time, we can show everybody out there that our multi-generational family farm can succeed as well, just like I know that yours can too. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. I found it really, really fascinating and really rewarding. If you have any feedback, please email me at shaney@realagriculture.com or call the Real Ag listener line at 855-776-6147. I would love to hear the things that you do to make your multi-generational family farm work. You can find more episodes of the Mind Your Farm Business podcast at mindyourfarmbusiness.com or on iTunes. Thanks to RBC Royal Bank for being our sponsor. And until next time, keep on minding your farm business.